You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Okay, so what we're going to do is some recitation, sort of going through this material, and there'll be some discussion sort of sprinkled throughout. And then we basically have set aside some time at the end just to sort of break up and sort of pray through this material. So if you came here alone, you can just pray by yourself. If you came here with a team or people that you know, you can get together and sort of just sort of pray through this. Because how do we work through the power of the algorithm without the power of the Holy Spirit? All right, so here's what we're going to be going through this morning. We'll start with just sort of a general definition, what is brain rot? And then we'll sort of look at, okay, what are the three biggest trends in terms of how is the digital environment sort of affecting people? And then how can we persuade people to have a healthy relationship with their screens? And like I said, then we'll sort of break up for some time to pray through this. Thank you. Okay, so yes. Here's the agenda. Thank you. So this material has been condensed from like a 4-week course that we went through earlier this year. So there's a lot of material that we're just not going to have time for this morning. So a lot of the research and the studies and stuff like that, we'll go through some, but we won't go through most of that. But at the end, there'll be a QR code up on the screen that you can scan, and there'll be sort of just, I think, a PDF, or you can grab the printed handout back there if you'd prefer. That'll have a lot of the resources and studies in specific. So if you want some of that information, we just don't really have time to go through it all this morning. So, okay, what is brain rot? Okay, last year, the Oxford English Dictionary, the OED, right? This was their word of the year, brain rot. So here's the Oxford English Dictionary's definition. Brain rot is the supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as the result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content, considered to be trivial or unchallenging. So brain rot is a term used to sort of capture concerns about the impact of consuming excessive amounts of low-quality online content, right? So especially when we're talking about this, mostly what we're talking about is like social media, but sometimes also video games. It could also be characterized, brain rot could be something that leads to this deterioration, okay? So the term's kind of interchangeable. It can be the experience like, oh, I'm experiencing brain rot right now because I just, you know, was on TikTok for 3 hours. Or it could be, I'm gonna fall off. It could be the content itself, like these videos are brain rot, right? So what does it feel like when we're talking about brain rot? What does it feel like? Okay, so when people talk about experiencing brain rot, it's like this fogginess. It's this inability to focus. Sometimes it sort of feels like this agitation, right? After I've been sitting and scrolling on my phone, sometimes it manifests as anxiety or negativity or depression. This is what it feels like when we experience digital information overload, right? When I've just spent way too much time looking at a screen. I feel kind of lethargic. And there's this sense that like my attention span just isn't what it used to be. And sometimes, you know, you begin to wonder, like, am I cognitively declining? Like, what's happening to me right now? And maybe, depending on how much time you're spending on your screen, maybe you are. And so this is the experience of brain rot. This is what it feels like. And then there's brain rot language, okay? So maybe you have heard some of these terms. This is brain rot language right here, meaning these expressions, these terms originated online in like viral culture, TikTok, YouTube, and then they sort of spread to the general culture, especially amongst the youths. So these terms are sort of born in trivial content. If you know a middle schooler, a high schooler, you've probably heard these terms. Can anyone define them? Does anyone know what these things mean? Tell the truth. I'm not gonna tell you, you can look it up. They're really stupid, some literal gibberish. Anyway, so you might hear some of this language, right? Especially if you're working with younger people, right? Where it's almost like, I don't even know what you're saying. It's like you're speaking a different language. Ah, because it came from the internet. Okay. So I thought that we could sort of pause here and maybe discuss this. Why are you here? How is this sort of coming up with your people? What are you noticing with the people that you're working with or in your home groups or with your kids? Or yeah, what are some of the, I don't know, results that you're seeing? Anyone got anything? Yeah, okay. So sometimes there's literally a communication breakdown, but other times it's like, man, it's like there's like a misfire socially where it's like, people don't really know how to make the most of this time. People don't know how to engage. And so, yeah, you just sort of like revert to the lowest common denominator of like what's socially acceptable in terms of how to speak to one another. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, totally. Other thoughts? Interesting. So she put the child locks on her phone for herself, not to like hand the phone to the child, but she was like recognizing like, I need some limits here for me. Okay. So there is some self-awareness sometimes of like, this is getting out of hand. Like, I feel like I'm sort of losing myself on my screen here, but I don't know what to do about it. Yeah, totally. Yeah. This is what people are connecting over. So if you, you know, yeah, for whatever reason, like, oh, I don't have TikTok, I don't have Instagram, then it's like, oh, then you're sort of cut out of this sort of socializing reality that people live in. Yeah. Rachel, do you have something? Yeah, right. I was talking to this college leader a couple months ago, and I was like, well, what are people like reading in your group? And she was like, people don't read in my group. Like, nothing? And she was sort of describing, like, especially if you sort of went through college during COVID, because, like, a lot of the standards were so lax then, everyone just sort of cheated. And so it's like, people don't know how to study, because it's like, you know, they spent 4 years just sort of cheating their way through undergrad or, you know what I mean? Like getting a degree that they just Googled, you know, like, so people don't know how to read, don't know how to study. Yeah, it's a different reality, Cindy. Yeah, we won't really talk about it this morning, but you know, this idea of sort of doom scrolling where it's like, this is negative content. I feel bad, and yet I can't stop. Like, I sort of need more, and there's this sense of, like, well, if I could just get enough information, then maybe I wouldn't feel so anxious. And yet the reality is it doesn't really work. Yeah, last one. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that later, but this breakdown, especially that's affecting younger people, the dysregulation of sleep, what's the effect on the emotions? Absolutely. Yeah, it's just like a tangible breakdown. Yeah, Brad, last one. Let's sort of break down what are some of the observable effects then of brain rot. Just so we know, okay, we're not just crazy. It's not like, well, the Christians have decided, you know. What people have noticed is, okay, there's these sort of categorically three big negative effects of the constant screen use. So first, there's a breakdown in the way that people think, right? Okay, so think about it, right? Repetition. Repetition is often how humans learn, right? We do things over and over. You memorize the multiplication table, right? Like you just memorize it, you look at it. But even stuff like, you know, I learned that if I smile more when I enter a room, like, oh, it leads to more positive social interactions. Okay, so the more that I smile, the more that I engage with people in a positive sense. Okay, so repetition, right? This is how we learn. If you've taken a psychology course, you've probably, you know, studied behaviorism or, you know, Skinner, positive and negative reinforcement, right? This is how human beings learn. Because what's happening in the brain is you're creating these neural pathways, right? So if this positive thing leads to a positive outcome, oh, I should do that again, right? If it leads to a negative outcome, oh, I should not do that again, right? So the problem is this screen, I don't have my phone up here, but a screen that's constantly in your hand is constantly teaching, constantly reinforcing, right? It's an appendage. It is attached to you. You can't even put it down for an eye exam. And that's what it's designed for, right? It's designed to be looked at. Think of all the notifications, the apps, just the screen itself. It fits right in your palm. You never have to put it down, right? So it's designed for repetition. Here, this is a study. This is just Pew Research Center. This study is from 2021. And they were looking at how much are people using the internet. And so what the study indicated is that basically a third of America is constantly online, right? Almost constantly, one third of America. And there it varies a lot by age range. So up to 50% of 18 to 29-year-olds are just never not plugged in to the internet through an app, through, you know, scrolling, whatever it is. So to break it down even more specifically, this is a little bit hard to see. So looking at daily phone screen time in the US, this is from 2023. Okay, Gen Z, right, is averaging 365 minutes a day. That's about 6 hours a day on a screen. Millennials don't fare much better, 4.6 hours, Gen X, 4.1, and even boomers, 3.5. And these are just averages, right? We all probably know people who are averaging way more than this. 9+ hours. They're just never not on their phone, on their laptop. Some people are putting 60 hours a week, right, into just scrolling. On a screen, 3 out of 10 people constantly online. So isn't it reasonable to think that if you spent 6 hours a day doing anything, right, if you were devoting 6 hours a day, that makes you an Olympian, right? At like scrolling. That's very serious. Oh, I'm very devoted to this. That it's going to have an effect on you. Even 3.5 hours a day, right? That's probably going to have an impact on you. Spending that much time in one specific environment, probably, yeah, it seems reasonable to think that that's going to change the way that you think, the way that you feel, what you believe. And it turns out, in fact, yes, it does. So this is a study, this is from 2009, right? So this is kind of old. This is like before everybody had a smartphone. So what they were studying, they were doing brain scans on people who were surfing the internet, right? So they had experienced internet surfers, people that regularly, you know, maybe worked in tech, spent a lot of time sort of surfing the internet. And they noticed, okay, people that spend a lot of time on the internet have these very distinctive neural pathways in their dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, right? This part of the brain up here. Oh, they have, you know, everybody that spends a lot of time has this very developed area right here. Versus novices, people that weren't, you know, didn't regularly spend time. So what they did is they did this brain scan, and then they followed up with these people 6 days later. But in the 6-day interim, they had the people that the novices, like, okay, we want you to go home and we want you to spend 1 hour a day surfing the internet. We know this isn't something that you regularly do, and then we want you to come back after 6 days and we're gonna scan you again. And so what they noticed is when they re-scanned these novices who were just spending 1 hour a day surfing the internet, extensive activity in this area, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, after 1 hour. So lo and behold, what the study indicates is it does change the brain, right? It changes what happens in our minds. So what would happen to someone who's spending 9 hours a day doing this, right? If there are noticeable changes after 1 hour a day, yes, there's going to be changes the more time that you spend. It changes the way that our brains work. Here's a helpful analogy. Okay, so people talk about short-term and long-term memory, right? Short-term memory is just sort of like what you're interacting with in the moment. I can remember like, oh, it's sort of cloudy out right now. I'm having this conversation. This person is wearing this color shirt, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's long-term memory, which is like, you know, song lyrics and things that you can remember years later and you've converted it to long-term memory. Short-term memory is like a thimble, right? It holds a small amount of information at a time. Long-term memory is like a bathtub. It's a bigger reservoir, right? So if you're sitting down and you're reading a book, you're taking thimbleful by thimbleful bits of information and you can slowly convert it into your long-term memory bathtub, right? Because you can sort of, I can change the pace at which I'm consuming this book or in a conversation, right? Again, the pacing sort of varies. I can absorb this information slower. Now, books are a slow drip. Conversation is a slow drip. The internet is a faucet, right? So our slow term, our short-term memory, right, that little thimble just cannot keep up with the absolute torrent of information coming at us every time you open your phone, right? So there's this constant overload of your mental load, right? The amount of information that you can absorb. And so what it does is it affects our ability to think deeply and to concentrate, right? Because we're constantly being overloaded. Not to mention, so there's shallowed thinking, there's weakened concentration, but the screen, right, is designed for the individual, right? The phone in your hand isn't like a partnered activity, right? It's me-sized, right? It's just for me. So my screen is designed for my entertainment, my promotion, right? My story, my experience. That's what's paramount with the screen, right? Me, 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 I. 9 hours a day, every day, forever, right? And not to mention, there's that algorithm running in the background, literally doing our thinking for us, right? You don't know what to watch? Here, let me suggest something. You don't know what type of person you would probably get along with? Here, how about this person right here, right? It's constantly absorbing everything that you're doing on your phone and making suggestions, right? So it's literally doing your thinking for you. So you don't even have to scroll. There's just an endless feed, right? 4 to 6 hours a day, conservatively. So, it's the second way, okay, so there's a breakdown in the way that we think. There's also often a breakdown in the way that we relate, right? Constant online absorption. Think about social media. What is the content that generates the most interaction on social media, on TikTok, on Instagram, Twitter? It's rage, right? It's outrageous, rage-inducing content. And big tech knows this, right? The big technology companies, Google, Apple, they know this. So I was reading this story, this is from 2018. There was this Irish digital media company, and they sort of falsely claimed that 2/3 of people wanted Santa to either be female or gender neutral. And so they posted this article claiming that they'd done this study. 2/3 of people want Santa to be a woman or gender neutral. Can you believe this? Okay, so it goes viral, right? Share. People are like, this is outrageous. And it wasn't even true. Like, it was like a completely false, fabricated claim. But people went nuts because it's just rage bait, right? So some of us probably know this term, rage bait, where it's like it's just designed to sort of incite you, right? Because that's what people want. It kind of works like this, okay? So you see something outrageous, something infuriating, and you're like, oh my God, I gotta say something about this, right? So you craft your new post and you publish it, and then more people see it and they're like, oh my, that's insane! You know, like, I can't believe that. And it just multiplies, right? Like mushrooms or something. It would be really nice if the internet was just full of like hilarious memes and, you know, like, remember in the olden days when it was like puppy videos, like in like 2008? That's not the world that we live in anymore. It's rage. So this, and again, like, I don't have time to go through it, but big tech basically has acknowledged this, right? Like these people that work for these companies have come out and been like, yeah, like, what we promote to the top of the people know that this is what people engage with the most. So if something is going to go viral, it's going to be rage-inducing. This is what's going to skyrocket. And so we're just swimming in this. We're just swimming in hate. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, normalizing it. And so how do we respond to this environment? Shame. Punishment. How dare you, right? Like, most of us are probably familiar with the term cancel culture, right? Because what social media does is it promotes this me versus you reality, right? Where we're constantly sort of comparing. We've got in-groups, we've got out-groups. And so when somebody is, how they respond is we mob up, right? Like, That's what humans have been doing since the dawn of time, right? Since the Romans, since the French Revolution, right? We love a mob. And the internet makes mobbing so easy to galvanize, right? It's fast, it's humongous, right? So you can just spread this content, rally the people around you that think the same way, and shame, punish, destroy, I'm gonna dox you, I'm gonna, you know what I mean? Like, we're gonna ruin your life, we're gonna cancel you. And it feels really morally justified, right? Like, you feel like the good guy. So we all get to be heroes, we all get to be vigilantes, finding the horrible celebrity in their tweet from 2009 where they did blah, 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 made this off-color joke. Yeah, we love that. But it drives our society apart. It affects the way that we relate to one another. The Surgeon General, this is from 2023, the Surgeon General, right, of the United States declared loneliness in our country to be an epidemic, right? People aren't getting along. People are isolated. People are divided. We're not solving this shame, this guilt problem in our culture. We're channeling our fear, our guilt into outrage, into shaming other people, and it's driving people apart. And people are living isolated, people are living alone. But it feels really good because it takes the heat off me. I get to be a part of something, right? We hate this guy, we hate this girl, we hate this movement, whatever it is, and I feel like a hero. And yet, relationships are destroyed. You know, families are torn apart, holidays are ruined, right? Because it's like, it's me versus you. And a lot of it is being perpetuated online. So finally, obviously, screens are affecting the way that we spend our time. Screens are meant for novelty seeking, right? In isolation. Again, it's my screen. I'm not sitting down next to another person watching this teeny tiny screen. Although if you have children, they're constantly like over your shoulder, like, what are you watching? What are you doing? Reading your text. And you're like, get out of here. You're five. You don't need to read my texts. But the point is, a screen is meant for me by myself, best used in isolation, and it's limitless, right? You'll never plumb the depths. Yes, porn obviously is a big part of this, and we can't really have this discussion without talking about pornography. 16 states in the United States, 16 states have declared pornography to be a public health crisis. Right? They're like, we need more research about this. We need to look into this. This is a crisis in our country. So yeah, I don't think I need to make a strong case that porn is a problem. But really, what we find with screens is that you could just consume whatever your mind could conceive of, right? So certainly, yes, porn is part of that. But it's just endless consumption, sometimes hate, sometimes nonsense, sometimes stupid videos, sometimes pornography. And we give these devices to children. Recent studies show that about 50% of today's middle schoolers have their own phones. 90% of high schoolers, right? Almost every high schooler has a phone at this point. And the statistics indicate that it is wreaking havoc on their mental health, right? It's wrecking them. So if you've read books like last year's Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, or I think it was 2017, the book iGen by Gene Twenge, these authors are suggesting, no, like, the internet is like really bad for kids. It's not just like, oh, this is a weird correlation here. Like, no, it's causation, right? Like, the internet is causing a mental health decline. So this is from Jonathan Haidt's Anxious Generation. This is a 2021 study of high school seniors and all the things that they're not doing these days, right? So you've got drinking, you've got getting a driver's license, getting a job, having sex, or even just dating, okay? And what we see is there's this sharp decline in all of these areas, right? And you're like, well, that's good. You know, like, they should have less sex, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not doing anything is the problem. They're not getting jobs. They're not getting driver's licenses. And so what you see is this sharp decline right around 2010. Phew, a precipitous drop. Could it be, and what he suggests is that it's because kids are just staying home, consuming endless content. You don't have to go out. You don't have to do these things. You don't have to learn these skills. You don't have to meet a nice girl and have like figure out how to have a conversation with her because you can just sit on your phone in this seemingly risk-free fantasy and consume endless beautiful bodies with no risk of rejection at all, right? No risk of commitment. You just sit in your room. And so people in general, and especially youths, right? Like their brains aren't even developed to be able to handle this yet. They're becoming emotionally, relationally, mentally detached, right? They're just absent. And so there's this term, people call it dislocation, right? Where it's like they're sitting right in front of you, right? They're sitting in your eye exam chair, and yet they're scrolling there an ocean away. Right? They're not really present. They're not really here. And it's damaging. Here is, this is a study, this is a Chinese study from 2023. So this study was looking at how social media addiction affects the way that we think and the way that we make decisions. We call this executive functioning, our ability to think and make decisions. So what this study was focusing on was things like emotions and sleep. Yes. So the researchers surveyed over 1,000 youths, young Chinese people, and what they found was that, lo and behold, social media addiction harms people's ability to think clearly and make good decisions. They were making poorer decisions the more time that they spent online because it was causing emotional problems and poor sleep, right? That dysregulation. Right, because I'm exhausted, I can't think clearly, I've been just absorbing this one kind of content, it's affecting their emotions. So all this seemingly meaningless time spent on TikTok or playing video games, looking at a screen, isn't harmless. It's damaging people's ability to think and make good decisions. It's playing with their emotions, and it's ruining their sleep. All right. So none of this is particularly new information at this point. You're probably not shocked by much of this. Again, this has been the water that we've been swimming in for over a decade now. But how do we use this as leaders, right? How do we sort of harness some of this information and allow it to inform the way that we serve the people that God has entrusted to us? How do we help people who can't seem to generate their own convictions, right? They just seem to be sort of regurgitating, I don't know, things that they heard online, TikTok trends. How do we help people who are just kind of antisocial, don't seem to know what to do with themselves in a group setting, kind of hate CT, right? Like we probably all have people in our homes that I don't like CT, like it makes me really anxious. How do we help people? How do we help people that are up to their eyeballs in pornography? All right, so here's some ideas. So what we're gonna spend the rest of this morning working through, hopefully quickly, is three sort of practical ways that we can help. Now, the path of least resistance, right, it's already, the neural pathways are already there. So the phone is in their hand, right? Everybody has a smartphone except my dad, who is very proud of the fact that he still has a dumb phone. Everyone else has a smartphone. So it takes intentionality to build new habits, right? It's already in your hand. The pathways are already formed. But we can build new habits because we're human beings, which means that we have been given neural plasticity. We can change the way that we think. We can build new habits, but you won't unless you choose to, unless we become intentional about this. The habit to scroll, to zone out is very strong. But we can build, we can teach people, okay, let's have a discussion about this, right? So unfortunately, if you were sort of hoping for like, okay, what are the like screen time allotments that we should like put into our house covenant or something like that, that's not what we're gonna be discussing here this morning. But what we see in scripture is that often spiritual growth is built on habits, right? Think about in the Old Testament, God is creating a people. I want you to be distinct. And so he's like, okay, roll out your calendar here. And on these specific days, we're going to have these festivals. You're going to spend time sort of reorienting yourself toward me, right? I want you to build this habit. I want you to literally look at your calendar. And we're going to celebrate on these days, on these specific days of the week. You're going to show up. You're going to make a sacrifice, right? Again, you're going to reorient yourself toward me, in theory. Israel was pretty bad at this. You're going to spend, you know, there's this charge. Like, I want you to regularly gather together and read the law, right? So it's like, okay, there's this foundation of habit building that we see in the Old Testament in terms of God's like, this is a healthy way to relate to me. And then in the New Testament also, right, think about what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. I discipline my body and I keep it under control, right? We're intentional about this. I'm making intentional choices. I'm disciplining myself. So habits, I think that this is a helpful way to sort of think about it. Habits are rhythms that can train us to transcend our feelings, right? I don't have to wade through, for example, whether I feel like brushing my teeth in the morning. It's just a habit. I do it before I leave the house. So I'm not like, you know, I don't know, like strolling through my halls trying to be like, oh, I just don't want to. Now I have an 8-year-old son. It's not a habit for him yet. So it's a fight every day for him to brush his teeth. Me? No, it's just a habit, right? And so again, in the rhythms of our lives, there's these habits so that it takes all the weight off of my feelings. Here's this great quote from one of my favorite books on this subject by author Samuel James from his book called Digital Liturgies. It's quite short, highly recommend. He says, habits create habitats for our hearts. They shape our identity and train our desires so that our feelings, which can change quickly, are not solely bearing up the weight of our character. Think about it. What if your character development, what if your spiritual growth was dependent on your feelings? That would be problematic. It would be really nice if I just like wanted to do spiritual things all the time. But I don't. That's not how it works. But we can build habits, right, to help us transcend some of those negative emotions, some of those selfish feelings, et cetera, et cetera. So here are just some helpful ideas for how to help people conceptualize and maybe even build better habits. Spending time with our disciples or in our cell groups, whatever it is, sort of developing a theology of habits, right? Let's look through scripture. Let's talk through this. What does the Bible say about habits? A lot of people get a lot of mileage. We did this in the class earlier this year out of a 3-day detox, right? Okay, let's delete all of the social media apps or let's take a 3-day detox from video game, whatever sort of you're pulled to most. Let's take 3 days off and sort of look at what happens, right? And so the idea here is just to build self-awareness, right? Like which app or which kind of media are you most drawn to? Why do you think that is, right? So maybe you do a bit of journaling, you know, day one, I noticed this. Day two, I noticed this. How hard was it? Just to develop the self-awareness, right? This is how it's affecting me. This is what my patterns are. And to teach them, okay, it's just 3 days. You could cut it if you needed to, right? There's lots of books these days on habits. People love Atomic Habits by James Clear, and it's really good. Other books like Switch or The Power of Habit, Changing for Good. These are other titles that people really like when it comes to, and all of those are secular. So you can get a lot of mileage out of reading something on it and just asking good questions, right? Helping people think through, well, what are the current habits in your life, right? Like teeth brushing. Or, you know, like, oh, on these days I spend time with these people. Or, you know, why do we go to meetings and sit under Bible studies week, et cetera, right? Like, what's the point of this? How does it affect your spiritual growth? And then, you know, so someone's like, okay, I'm going to build this new habit. I'm going to do this new thing. Okay, so how do you want me to help you with this? How would you know when it has become a habit, right? So again, we're just having conversations with people about this topic. So I thought maybe we could discuss how do we have these types of conversations without the, like, you're micromanaging me? How do we avoid the critique of you're putting me under law? Yeah, I think that's really practical, sort of breaking it down, right? Because I think that that is what holds people back. It's just too overwhelming. I can't even conceptualize, you know, like if I tell my son, like, it's time to clean your room, it's like, I'm torturing him. It's a meltdown because, yeah, he's overwhelmed. He doesn't know where to start because it's trashed. And right, okay, so let's start with this and maybe let's break it down into smaller, sort of manageable steps. That's great. All right, moving on. Gathering, right? Okay, so maybe you're noticing people in your group, they're having a hard time staying focused, they don't seem to be thinking their own thoughts, whatever. Okay, so we want to teach intentionality about, you know, let's form some God-led habits here, but also we want to promote actually gathering together in embodied communities, right? This is a tangible way to sort of resist the dehumanization that we find online, right? That constant sort of hate, that me versus you. No, no, no. We want to be groups of people that actually gather together. And we have a strong potential for that here in Dwell, right? That's kind of our thing. Like, we're like a community church, and we have small groups and home churches and cell groups, et cetera, et cetera. We know that Americans are living in isolation, right? We all sort of just lived through COVID, which was isolation in the extreme, right? And saw a lot of the effects of that. And so, yeah, a lot of times what we're seeing is people don't even know how to have conversations with other people, right? Especially young people, let alone how do you navigate a conflict? What do you do if you don't get along with somebody where we're, you know, quarreling over this thing? Or I just don't like this person. Like, they irk me and I can't figure out how to get along with them. Right? How do we help people through that? Like, actually, that's like really normal. You don't have to cut that person off and, you know, stop attending family gatherings and things like that. On the internet, if you don't like somebody, if you disagree, you just mute them, right? Or you unfollow them, you unfriend them, whatever. You can just surround yourself with people that have the same sense of humor, think the same way, politically, you know, fall into the same camp, et cetera, et cetera. But what do you do in a ministry house with, like, real people who are weird or, you know, like they're not like you or they're really type A and you're like, God, leave me alone. What do you do in your cell group, right? With this person that just keeps running their mouth and can't, you know, like seems to have no social skills. Yeah, we gotta help people, right? Like navigate this stuff. Here's an example. A college leader sent me an email. She said, I discipled this girl who was raised on YouTube. She said her dad died when she was young and her mom was always working. And so she just was always on YouTube and it shows. She said she's come a long way since the high school group, but she's had to give this girl a lot of direct feedback. Like, hey, it's rude to pull out your phone when you're hanging out one-on-one with another person. And she said something that they often do together is sit down and listen to a podcast together to hear, this is how people dialogue. This is how people listen to one another. She said, anyway, I think there's a lot of students in that boat who feel lost on how to relate to people in real life settings. And I think that this is really true, especially, again, if you're working in student ministries. But sometimes even grown-ups are really bad at this and are really out of practice, right? Because you don't have to try that hard, again, on the internet. You can just run your mouth and post this, that, and the other thing. And you're like, I don't care. Just unfollow me if you don't like what I'm saying, right? Like, people say that all the time. But here's what the author of Hebrews says, right? That we should not abandon our own meeting together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. We want to prioritize actually gathering together in community. And so we got to do the work to help people manage their real life social skills, right? Manage conflicts. So again, here is just a list of resources. These are all books, some secular, some not. Again, they're printed on your sheet there. David Brooks, How to Know a Person, really practical. Here's how to build deeper connections with people. Ed Welch, Side by side, he's a Christian counselor. How do you support people through life's struggles? They're coming, right? How do we know how to navigate people through difficult situations? Kate Murphy, you're not listening. How do we be humble? How do we learn curiosity? How do we learn intentionality in our relationships? Getting to Yes by Fisher and Urey. How do we teach people how to reach mutually beneficial agreements, right? We're not getting along. How do we navigate that? Captivate by Vanessa Van Edwards. This is a very tangible, practical. Her basic premise is that charisma and people skills can be taught. And so she has all these practical ideas. How do you walk into a room? How do you have a conversation? How do you smile more? Things like that, that maybe you didn't learn if you're just, you know, spent the first 15 years of your life looking at a screen. Oh, Sandy Gottman, they all got great stuff. Conflict, relationships. A good hack is Sandy on his website, RW360, Relational Wisdom 360. He's got just a plethora of blogs, and you could just get on there and read some of these blogs together with your people, right? 10 ways to connect deeply at Thanksgiving, 17 ways to respond to explosive politics. Anyway, we got resources. It is much more appealing to spend time with people if you have some social skills, right? So helping people develop in this area, it's going to cut, ideally, in theory, it's going to cut down a lot of that social anxiety. Everybody's got social anxiety these days. Okay, let's learn. How do you spend time with other people, right? Like, how do you relate to people in public? Sometimes we need to devote literal, tangible time with people. And so there's resources out there. So we can teach people these skills. Wouldn't it be a shame if people never learn the art of conversation, right? Never learn how to ask people questions, if they never get to a place where they enjoy home church, right? Where they're like willing to go to CT. They never figure out how to apologize, right? How to say sorry. Think about the marriages, the friendships that would benefit from stuff like this. But if you're raised on the internet, you're not necessarily going to learn this. So this is part of our job as disciple makers and leaders. And finally, Jesus. This might seem like practically underwhelming, but we want to teach people how to pursue a person, right? It's not just learn these principles and memorize Bible verses. No, there's a person. It's a personal relationship, right? So rather than like, well, here's the limits to how much time you can spend playing video games, we want to encourage people to move toward someone, right? So here's another quote from that book, Digital Liturgies. He says, in a world of unceasing noise, his voice will break through and lead us. In a world of rootless identity crisis, he reminds us that we belong to him, that we are created by and for him, and that he will wipe every tear from our eyes as we finally see the one face we've longed to see. In a world of shame, he tells us that our record of debt is canceled and that nothing can separate us from his love. In a world of lust, he offers his own broken body in the place of our defiled body. The digital messages that captivate so easily wither in light of who our wisdom really is and how much he has done, is doing, and will do for us. We're out of time, but I think that this is sort of worth considering, right? How would you know? How do I know if somebody's just sort of regurgitating spiritual ideas? Or are they actually, you know, receiving conviction from Jesus? What's the difference? How do we sort of ascertain that? This is John Cleary's term, but how do we help people to grow Jesus bigger, right, in their lives? That it's not just, I want to grow dwell bigger, or I want to grow, no, it's him, right? It's a personal relationship with him. And this is what, you know, the means of growth are for, sure. And we can, we got lots of great training here in Dwell. I'm very thankful for that. We are an equipping church. You're at an equipping workshop right now. But it would be a shame to just sort of outsource this training to, well, that's what LTC is for, or you could take a class on the means of growth. Know that, that we sit down with the individuals that God has entrusted to us, and we go through these sort of hard-to-pin concepts, right? What is it like to hear from Jesus? How do you know when he's speaking to you? Learning solitude and silence and things like that, that is so foreign, right, these days in this loud, bombastic, annoying, brain-rotted reality. Yeah, but we're not going to discuss it because we're out of time. All right, so here's the ideas. Here's what we've covered so far. Brain rot sort of negatively affects us in these three ways, but there are things that we can do, things that we can prioritize, things that we can teach people. Be intentional about habits. Learn some social and relational skills, and prioritize hearing from Jesus himself.